Talking with TD. Talking with TD. Touchdown, Tennessee! The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Terron Davenport.
Put up a shut up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right, back from the bye week. It is now game week for the Tennessee Titans. You are now rocking with TD. I'm your host, Terron Davenport. I appreciate each of you for tuning in. We got a lot to get into. We got Jarvis Brownlee Jr. stopping through. A little locker room interview that we had. I got to get those while we can. You know what I'm saying? Those that know what I'm talking about know what I'm talking about. But on another note, we got Chris Sanders with Run TMC. We're going to talk a lot. I want to get into Calvin Ridley. I want to get into Will Levis. I want to just get into all things Titans with him. We got Parker Kelly over here making it happen.
What's going on, TD?
That's right. Riding solo. Let's go. Let's go. There's just a lot. You know, this team was on the bye week, and it was a good opportunity for everyone to just kind of reset, recalibrate, and it's what this team needed, right? Fortunately for them, they got a win, and they were able to stew on that going into the bye week while they were away. And I think it was an opportunity, and Brian Callahan kind of spoke to it, just a chance to reassess and take a look at where they stand. And to me, the word recalibrate is one that really applies, because coming into this season, the big talk was about how much this team is going to throw the football, how successful they were going to be doing that. But I tell you what, it turns out their run offense is kind of like the lesser of two evils, because let's face it, they can't really do anything on offense. It's been a struggle outside of the Dolphins game. So when it comes to running the football, this offensive line is much better than at that than pass pro. Will Levis is a guy that, you know, you want to establish the run for, and then you could work the play action. And he actually spoke on that on Wednesday. And I think if you look at just the way he is, like, he's a guy, he doesn't like to paper cut you. You know, he wants to take the samurai sword and cut you in half, like really gash you, slice you. And that's why he has that penchant for throwing the football down the field. I thought it was interesting. He was asked, Paul Kaharsky asked him about the deep throws and why they're not here this season and how they were last season. And he actually said that they may not have always been the best choice to do it last year. I'm sitting there looking like, dude, that's what everybody bought into you about, you know, your deep field passing ability. Now, granted, they wanted you to be able to stay on schedule and hit the throws that are underneath, but don't lose sight of what you do the best. And obviously he had the injury in week four, right, where he dove for the first down. He said that he thought he got it, and he would have told Callahan to challenge it. But he said, man, like, my SHIT was hurt. I wasn't ready to go back out. And, you know, I joke about that, but I tell you something, man. You know, I get it. Like, everybody wants to poke fun, and everybody wants to have jokes. And, yeah, it's all fun and games. But, you know, they made the joke about Will Levis when he was on the tablet talking to Mason Rudolph, and, you know, how he made that face and how he was clearly something wasn't right. I asked him about that. He said he was trying to pop his shoulder in place, right? So here's a guy on the sideline, right, trying to pop his shoulder in place so he could play again, but people want to make fun of him. I wanted to point that out because it's just like, you know, I get it. Like, everybody wants to have the jokes and everything like that, but one thing you can't question with Will Levis is his toughness. And I'm not sitting here making excuses or anything like that, but you cannot question how tough this guy is. You know, to be standing, sitting there on the sideline, trying to pop his shoulder in the middle of watching film with Mason Rudolph, you know, in between series. I mean, you got to tip your cap to him for that. Now, there are some things that have to be better, like, without a doubt. You know, he has to be better in different ways. And that's something that Brian Callahan, he just absolutely, he has to consider, you know, as he's going through this. Levis said that he felt good practicing on Wednesday. He felt that, you know, he was able to throw the ball and low pain tolerance. And, you know, he said that it's really just a matter of being able to do what he's asked to do. One thing that was also good is he talked about the importance of protecting himself. It's always important, but it's even more important this time when you got it's your right shoulder. Now, we watched him throw on Wednesday. He was throwing on the move, rolling out to the left, rolling out to the right. It looked like everything was fine. Now, he has a little bit of like a brace, one of those. It's like tape. If you go on my Twitter, you could see, or my X, whatever you want to call it, you could see what it looks like. But it's just kind of like, looks like a stabilizer for the shoulder. He said that he had an AC injury to his left shoulder. That was actually worse than this one. He said that this one won't require surgery or anything like that. And we'll see what happens, right? You know, it's a pain thing. I tell you what you can't do, though, right? You can't shoot that shoulder with Toradol. You need to be able to have full feeling, and especially someone like Levis who's so in tune with his mechanics. But I make no mistake about it. He really wants to be out there. And I asked him actually about watching this team put up 30 points without him there on the field, watching them get their first win without him on the field. And this is what he said. I thought this was pretty interesting. Check it out.
I mean, obviously, I was ecstatic for us to get that win, but it's like, no matter, I guess if you have a certain sense of competitiveness in you, like, you feel that, like, guiltiness. Like, why do I feel like I wasn't as much a part of that win as I, you know, would have wished that I was? So it was tough dealing with that for, like, a day, but just, you know, flipping the page, getting ready, obviously, with an injury to deal with now, just focusing on that. But being able to roll from that last win, and, you know, like Coach said, we're not relieved. We're not, you know, all of a sudden, since we have a good win, we're not going to take our foot off the pedal. Like, we know what we got in front of us. It's a long road to go, and we just got to keep going.
So without a doubt, they aren't relieved. They want to keep going. Levis wants to be out there. But I tell you what, and I did this in Whiteboard Wednesday. I don't care who's out there. They need to run the football. And you look at the Colts defense, run defense specifically, they're giving up .151. On the ground per game. But you still have Zaire Franklin and EJ Speed. And those are two guys. You talk about how fast Ernest Jones the fourth and Kenneth Murray Jr., how fast they make the defense look. That's the same type of impact that Franklin and EJ Speed have. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Zaire Franklin has 750 tackles so far. I say that jokingly, but from what I'm pretty sure he's leading the league in tackles already, you know. So that is something that I'm going to look it up right here as we speak. 23 solo tackles he has. So I'm not sure where that ranks, but, you know, that's a good amount. And he's someone that's 23 solo tackles, but we talk about tackles overall. And man, why isn't this crap loaded for me?
EJ Speed has 54 total tackles on the year, which leads the NFL.
So it's EJ Speed. Yeah. Okay, not Zaire Franklin. They're both really good linebackers. And I tell you, you know, the 151 that they're giving up, naturally you're going to say that they're trash against the run. But I asked Peter Skoronski about it, and he said that it's still going to be a challenge. Listen to what Skoronski had to say about the Colts' run defense.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, you look at their game last week, you know, Jacksonville had two just really, really big runs.
Mm-hmm.
That could have easily been, you know, TFLs if you look at those runs. So it's not like they're getting gashed in a lot of ways. You know, they're having a lot of really great run stuffs and TFLs. And, so you don't really see, you know, the statistics might show up. You don't really see them
right. Necessarily,
you know, have a huge issue. So it's still a huge challenge. Those guys are really, really physical. Haven't gone against them last year. You know, obviously, their stats and tackles are always up there in the league with those numbers, so it'll be a huge challenge.
I know you touched on it briefly, but, you know, the speed that EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin have, like, how tough does that make it for you to get your assignments taken care of?
Yeah, I think it's speeds everything up. You have to be that much more aware. I think we saw a little bit of that mentality with Miami and how those guys play, and it's a little bit similar in terms of their downhill and physicality, sort of their style of play. But yeah, it'll be tough for sure.
So there you have it right there. You know, he talked about their physicality and their speed. I mean, you look at these two guys, right, and I just looked it up. Zaire Franklin has 51 tackles. So between the two, you got 105 tackles. I mean, that's an awful lot. Last year, Franklin had 179, right, and Speed had 102. So these are two guys that are not unfamiliar with finding the football. So it's going to be all about going to them. I actually have a pretty solid – play that the Titans have gone to a couple times to get long runs. And it's going to be tough to do that against these guys. But you look on Whiteboard Wednesday, you'll be able to see it. And I think, you know, it's going to be all about scoring points, right? And marrying the run game with the pass game. So we'll see what happens there. You look at the flip side of it, you got Alec Pierce, who, I mean, this dude is hey. Coming out of Cincinnati, he was one of the receivers that I really liked. I love his deep threading, deep catching ability, deep threat ability that he has. And he's averaging 28.3 yards per catch. I mean, almost 400 yards off of 13 catches. It's going to be a big task. Michael Pittman is going to be out. It looks like he has an injury that will probably land him on IR. So that should be more targets for Pierce. But you also got A.D. Mitchell, who is another fast guy vertically. And one of the guys that's going to be tasked with actually covering them is Jarvis Brownlee Jr. And he's actually the subject of our one-on-one this week. I wanted to sit down and talk to him. I was just so impressed with what he did last game against the Dolphins. And just overall, you know, he was one of my top corners. Just as far as, like, what I liked in a corner coming out. And lo and behold, he landed with the Titans, and he's off to a solid start. So here's Jarvis Brownlee Jr.
For you, I didn't get to talk to you after, you know, going back to the crib, but I know that was an experience. What was that like for you?
It was great, man. Something that I dreamed of doing, you know. And it was just something that meant a lot to me, not just to me, but just to my family, you know, my brothers, sisters, and aunties and nephews and nieces and stuff like that. And just being able to go back home and just, you know, show the younger generation that they could do it too. I think that's the most thing that I took from that. You know, just knowing that I could show these other kids that they can do it too. You know, the guys that was once in my shoes or in my shoes right now.
You were a fifth-round pick. I might add one of my favorite corners in this draft. But you've come out and you've proven that, you know, you belong here. What is it inside you? Like, what drives you? What makes you able to, you know, do what you did against Waddle, against Tyreek Hill?
Man, honestly, man, you know, every day, man, I just had this picture in my mind since draft day. You know, I picture all the guys that went in front of me. You know, not the – you know, take anybody's talents away from them and say they're not better than me, but I feel like I deserve to be in front of some of those guys on that draft night. So I just play with that edge and just let the world know that I'm one of the top corner rookies, and you know, I'm gonna keep showing that every week. And man, just keep playing with that edge that I play with. Like I said, man, I play with a chip every time I go on the field, because I know, man, the green grass, you know, it ain't for granted. So, you know, you gotta take advantage of every opportunity you get on it. And, man, just knowing that, you know, bro, it ain't promised. And knowing that, man, I got a daughter out here. So just to see a smile on her face and me just keep going out there, man, she made me go harder every day, man. And I think that just made me even better, like even more want to go out there and just play harder.
How much did growing up where you grew up influence and build that mindset that you have now, that dog that you got?
I think it built a lot, man. Like I said, man, I've been through a lot in my childhood.
Yeah.
With me, you know, being shot in the foot and, you know, always being that kid that was always left in the back and things like that. And I think it really took a toll on me. I just always told myself, and everything I do, no matter if it's on and off the field, I'm going to go 110% at it, no matter if it's on the field, in school, anything, because I know what I was capable of. I know the hard work that I put in, and I knew the work ethic that was inside of me. So, man, it was just always striving, and just knowing that, you know, I was the only boy in my household. So, and I had a lot of girls that I had to take care of. So, man, just keeping that mindset and just till now, I think it's taking me a long way, and I think it's going to continue taking me a long way.
You were making your first start, going against some really good receivers, but all along, the moment never got too big for you. How much did all the adversity and everything that you went to, like, how much did that make it possible for you to be like, man, this is just a game. Like, I've been through bigger and worse things.
Man, I think it helped me a lot, just knowing that, you know, you're always going to face adversity at every obstacle of your life, or things are not going to always go your way. So for me, man, you know, just being through what I've been through and all the things I've been through, You know, just knowing that when I was going into the game, you know, don't make the moment too big, man. You know, these guys, they great, but you also great too, man. You know, you put the work in to get here. You know, you wouldn't be here if they didn't think you was great. And my teammates believed in me. Guys that I looked up to before I even got in this league believe in me. So, man, that's just like an extra bonus to my game. And just knowing, you know, what I put in, day out. You know, I believe in my technique. I believe in what I do. And knowing that as long as I believe in myself and my technique and how that confidence that I have every week and play with that edge, man, I know it's going to take me a long way against any receiver I play or any opponent that I step in front of.
And last thing, this guy next to you, what makes him the best nickel corner in the league?
Man, I think he just – you don't know what to expect from him, man. You know, he's a quiet guy.
You know he think he can sing. Look at him.
He's a quiet guy, man. And I think that's what the biggest takeaway from him, because you don't know what to expect. Think he's a quiet guy, he come hit you in the mouth. So I think that's the biggest thing you take from him. And then also, man, you know, he becoming a vet, man. You know, there's a lot of things I learned from him also. You know, just being that nickel and learning from that position. And, man, that's a lot he taught me, just reading keys, you know, reading alignments, and knowing the respect from guys. And he's a guy that I'm going to keep looking up to and keep taking knowledge from, a guy that I see as a big brother. And, man, I just grateful to be playing on the side of this guy right here.
Appreciate it.
So that was Jarvis Brownlee Jr. It's hard not to like him, man. That's one thing that I noticed, even going back to the Senior Bowl. It was always positive energy. I remember joking with him after that first practice, and I told him, like, man, I tell you, if you and I practice together, like, we'll fight every day. And he just looked at me and laughed, and I'm like, hey, man, that's a compliment, because it speaks to how feisty you are and how you are as a corner. And it just has always been positive energy from him. I love it. And you see the video I have on X, he and James Williams walking out onto the field, and you know, you see the excitement in his face, and he's like, man, back at the crib. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? But I'm back at the crib. Like, you could just feel the positivity coming from him. So that's pretty cool. I definitely appreciate Jarvis for taking a moment. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run TMC. For you,
fresh, 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 fresh. And as the music fades, the lights dim. I know where we're going. And now, coming to you live from the Philadelphia Spectrum. For your 76ers. Starting at shooting guard, out of Louisiana, number 22, Andrew Tony.
And now, starting safety for the Tennessee Titans, Lance Shelters.
Hey, that's hilarious coming from Trey McBride.
Man, what's going on, man? Hey, funny story, man. I was watching TV, man, and I'm not trying to crack on you, but I turned on TV channel 2. It's late, real late. I see this dude that looked just like you. But then my wife's like, baby, that ain't TD. That's Sam Cassell. I'm like, no, baby, that's TD. So congratulations, man. You made it.
That is so funny, because it must have been the NBA special, because before that, they had this thing called the click the pick or something like that. And I'm watching. And my girl looked, and she was like, when did Tyrone Hill start making NFL picks? What's he know about Devondre Sweat? I said, oh, no. That's not Tyrone Hill. That's Chris Sanders. So now that we got that out of the way, coming back from the bye week, one of the major things that Brian Callahan is tasked with is getting the ball to the playmakers. Calvin Ridley is making a lot of money. I don't know that it's all the way his fault, but he's not getting the football. DeAndre Hopkins is not getting the football.
True.
What can they do to find ways to get these playmakers the football and find ways to get more explosive on offense?
You know, number one, I mean, you talk about the guys not getting the ball. Look at the stats that you have right now. You got Ridley that has 9 catches for 141 along of 40. Hopkins has 10 catches for 121 long of 20. Boyd has 10 catches, you know, for I think it's 100, 200 some yards and not that many touchdowns. This is what you need to do. And I'm not going to act like I'm a better offensive coordinator than Brian Callahan or Nick Holtz or anything of that. But here's what I would do to try to get my playmakers the football. I would go like a 10 personnel. When I say 10 personnel, that's one back, zero tight ends, and four wide receivers. And then I would get in a bunch since a 3-by-1. And then I'll put DeAndre Hopkins at the X, or I'll put Cavarelli at the X and let them get one-on-one coverage over there. They got to figure out a way to get those guys the ball, because if you look at the guy that I just named, TD, those guys are – they have the potential to make some plays downfield. And I think that, you know, Brian Callahan can do it in that sense.
Yeah, what do you think of going like that 10 personnel you mentioned and go 3-by-1 and you got backside isolation? I mean, that's something else. What do you think of that?
Oh, man, I mean, that's what you want, because you want your best guy to be isolated one-on-one. You want a guy that, especially at the wide receiver position, the speed of Calvin really to where, you know, you take advantage of that one-on-one, because if you go 3-by-1, if you go 3-by-1 on a 3 or a bunch side, you're going to get a lot of guys over there, and then you're going to have one guy on the left that's taking care of the X, Y receiver. So you want to do some things like that. And then also, too, is, you know, we always talk about, you know, sending guys in motion. Send guys in motion, then you can look at the secondary, and if a guy runs with him, you know it's some type of man underneath. So you can do some things like that to really get those guys the ball. But at the end of the day, you got three good wide receivers that are now making plays downfield.
So, obviously, we talk about the receivers, and that is something we're going to discuss, but somebody has to get them the football. So, when you look at Will Levis and you look at this bye week, you know, I asked Brian Callahan about just how or if that time just sitting back and watching the game against the Dolphins and then having that bye week, if that could help him do, I quote, rewire his brain.
Yeah.
Do you think that is something that will benefit him? How do you expect to see him coming out of this time if he does return?
I think that it's going to help him if he, you know, just like, the couple of weeks, the weeks that they had off, you go back and you watch film. I know that sounds kind of cliche, but if you go back and watch film, that's what film is to correct your mistakes. And I think that, you know, with the offensive coordinator and Brian Callahan and that offensive staff, they need to really pinpoint, you know, okay, this is what you need to work on. You're staring down the receiver. Watch the body language of the corner. Watch the movement in the secondary so he can get a sense of what's going on. Because we talked about it when they were playing against the Green Bay Packers. If I'm a quarterback and I know that a guy is sitting at 5 yards and he's looking at me, I got to get off that read immediately and go to my second and third read. So, you know, with Brian Callahan and Nick Holtz, I think they got to make sure that they show him that film. Okay, look at the body language of this corner. Look at the second. Look how he's moving. Look at if they're in a cover two shell, that's two safeties high, and one start to get antsy and move, that means he has to get somewhere, so you need to immediately get off that read. So, you know, those are little things that he can improve on. But after he improves on it and looks at it in film, now it needs to translate into the game and do what he learned.
And that's the big thing, translating it to the game. How do you, if he does play, how do you expect to see him respond?
I think he's going to respond pretty good. I mean, I, he's a mentally tough guy because there's a lot of stuff that's thrown at him. And I think that it relies on the coach to where, you know, you got to make sure that you build his confidence early. And don't just chuck it down the field. And, you know, I know we want to throw it to the wide receivers, kind of what we're talking about, but don't chuck it down the field yet. Just throw it to, you know, some of your playmakers like Pollard, you know, a little swing pass or a hitch to Boyd or Cavarelli running a slant just to get your feet wet and feel a little confidence. Because here's the deal. If he throws an interception on the first series, his confidence is shot. So now we have a situation like that. Now you're the head coach. Now what do? You're going to have to make a decision. Do I want to continuously want him to make interceptions or make bad plays, or do I want to make Rudolph to come in just to manage the game and not have turnovers? That's the question that he's going to have to ask.
Yeah, and that's the question. If he does play, how long do you think that margin for error is? How long do you think it is?
It's short. And the reason why it's short is because, you know, you have a defense that's ranked number one in the league. So if you just manage the ball and make right decisions, you're going to put yourself in position to win this game. And that's what you want to do. I mean, we have a defense that, man, I'm going to tell you something. This defense is flying around, and they're really, really good. But if you have a situation to where you got one position that's turning over the football, then sometimes you got to – and it's hard, that's the nature of the league. That's the hard part about the business. You got to make a hard decision and take him out because you have another quarterback behind him that manages the game well.
So you feel this team, if Mason Rudolph was to be the quarterback, you feel they're a playoff team?
You know, see, here's what I want people to understand. This is just my opinion, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think Will Levis is the better quarterback, but he doesn't make better decisions than Rudolph. And that's how I kind of look at it. Because if you look at the arm strength, who has a better arm strength? Levis. Who has a better running ability? Levis. Who can throw the ball further? Levis. But who protects the football? Rudolph. Who goes through his progression? Rudolph. Who makes the right read? Rudolph. So even though Levis is the better quarterback, he doesn't make the right decision at all times, and that's what costs you sometimes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at that, it's a matter of staying on schedule, right? You look at the 3rd and 4 in the Dolphins game. There were two of them, right? The first one, you had Levis. Chigakonkwo was open. Levis looked at it. He didn't throw it. He scrambled, and he ended up diving, and he hurt his shoulder. And they had to punt, right? Then you look at the 3rd and 4 a couple series later, same type of route, a little spot-up route, and Mason Rudolph saw it. He threw it to Josh Wiley. It's a 5-yard gain, and they moved the chains, and they eventually got the field goal. So that's the difference there. But when you look at it, how much of a cap is it? Like, is that cap that you have with Rudolph good enough to trade off of the high ceiling that you have with Levis?
Let me give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about also. Look at the year we lost to the Ravens. Who was the quarterback? Trent Dilfer. Trent Dilfer was a quarterback, but you had a defense that was really, really good. But if you look at when they played us in the playoff game, Trent Dilfer completed, I think, 7 or 9 passes and had only 71 yards. But here's the difference. He had 0 turnovers. So the key is just protecting the football, making the right reads, not throwing interceptions. Because if you look at when they played the New York Jets, they had 7-0. They're in the red zone. Then all of a sudden, you try to roll the ball to Pollard, and the Jets get in, the momentum changes. Just imagine if Rudolph's in the game. He protects the football. Even though they might not get 7, they get 10. It's 10-0. You still have the momentum. Those are kind of the things that I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Now, as far as the bigger picture, right, the future weighing in, how much do you weigh that into this decision? Because, I mean, do you think, like, if they go to Rudolph from Levis, that's in essence canceling the Will Levis experience, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, they're gonna go in a draft, and they're going to look for a quarterback, and they're going to look at free agency because, you know, they're banking on Will Levis to be that guy. They're banking on Will Levis to be that franchise quarterback. And you can say that all you want and say it all day, but Will Levis has got to do that. I mean, listen, he has the potential. He has the tools. But I just think it's the decision-making that kind of screws him up a little bit. And I say that respect because I don't ever want to disrespect a quarterback. But at the end of the day, you are the guy that makes the right decision. That's why Tom Brady, that's why Peyton Manning, that's why John Elway, that's why Dan Marino, those guys were so good. Yes, they made mistakes. Yes, they threw interceptions, but they learned from that, and then they got better as time got time had.
Yeah, I'm curious how this whole thing is going to work out. We're going to see. Defensively, I know you mentioned this defense being good, but isn't there a question to be had about the lack of creating turnovers?
That's a great point. I mean, they do need some turnovers, but the one thing I love about this defense, it's a fast defense, man. I mean, guys are running around, and here's a guy that we really haven't been talking about on the defense is Murray. Man, yeah. Murray's flying around. He's running through people's lips. You know, I mean, that's what you want. And, you know, I know they haven't had any turnovers. I know they haven't had a lot of interceptions. But at the end of the day, once you start getting those things, it's going to be like a snowball. Interception here, a fumble here, something that creates momentum to get turnovers. But I agree with you 100%. They have the best defense in the league, but they have the worst in getting turnovers.
Yeah, it's really interesting how Murray and Ernest Jones IV, those guys being in the defense, just makes it look so much faster because of how much they're able to range from sideline to sideline.
But you know what makes them so good, T, is their instincts. They read their keys. I mean, when they read their keys, I mean, they're shooting those gaps. I mean, they're finding out where the ball's at is because they read their keys. And if you're a linebacker, you can't have one misstep. You can't have, you know, one false step because you'll get hit in the mouth by offensive linemen. So when they read their keys, and you can tell that they study field because they're always in position to make the tackle, because even though a lot of guys are getting accolades like Landry and all those guys, that shows up on the stat sheet. But you, these guys are around the football. These guys are making tackles. You got Murray that has 31 tackles. You have Jones that has 29. So, you know, when you're making tackles in the game, you just make your defense better. Why? Because you're reading your keys and you have great instincts.
What are your thoughts on – so you got Will Levis. He practiced today – he practiced on Wednesday. Then you got, you know, DeAndre Hopkins got a rest day. They just had the bye week. Like, what are your thoughts? I mean, respectfully, like, what do you – how do you look at that?
We don't – dude, when I play, we didn't have no such thing called a rest day. I mean, we didn't have that. But here's the thing. You make a great point. You've been off. You've been on for a week. So, I mean, I know he's been in the league. And it's no, I think DeAndre Hopkins is one of the best receivers of all time. But at the end of the day, you're talking about a quarterback that's struggling. You got a quarterback that's trying to, you know, have camaraderie with your receivers. But if you're having a rest day, how are you going to have, you know, timing on the routes? What am I looking for? I know you can look for it on film and all those things, but you have so many moving pieces to where you can't have the timing if you're not actually doing it. And if you look at the league, especially during the year, you really don't have that much time. So you need to make sure that DeAndre Hopkins is on the field so you can have that timing and have that, you know, rapport with your wide receiver.
Yeah, and I mean, look, if there's anybody that can make up for the lack of practice being out there, it is Hopkins, because you look at his game, you know, that back shoulder, he just makes it happen there, you know, but still, I just wonder, you know, how this game is going, and you're not the only former player to kind of question, you know, guys getting time off, coming off of the bye. It's interesting.
But see, here it is. Here's the thing, too, is, you know, I would have broken fingers, broken ribs, all those things, but I had to understand something very quick, that if you sit out, there's a guy right behind you that wants to eat. And yeah, if he goes in and does well, you're going to be gone. So what I did mentally, there was no rest days. I mean, there was times where I busted up my foot to where one of my toes exploded in my foot because, you know how you run and you stop and it hits the front of the shoe? My second toe exploded in my shoe. So in my mind, there was no thought of me missing practice on Monday. You know what I did? This is goofy. I cut out the middle of the front of my shoe. I taped it up and I started to practice. There was no rest days. You know, it was because my job was on the line each and every year. And I think that a lot of guys, and I'm not saying DeAndre Hopkins, a lot of guys know that, shoot, I can take a rest day because I know that I'm on a team. But for me, there were so many receivers in that stall to where I had to make sure I was on the field so they could see that I'm ready to play.
Yeah, how about that? How about that? Well, one last thing before we get out of here, and I look at this team, and I just wonder – what can be made of this season? You look at the AFC.
Yeah.
You look at the division. I mean, should Titans fans, should they have hope? Give them a reason for hope to coming out of this bye week.
Yeah. I mean, they should. But here's what's going to be the ticker. If they go and they lose to the Indianapolis Colts, then now the Dobbers going to be down. Because after that, you got the Bills, and then you got the Detroit Lions. So them are two tough teams on the road. So basically, in my mind, that you definitely have to win this game. But here's what I love about this team: you still have a resilient team. You know, everybody, their back was against the wall last week or the week before when they were 0-3 and they went to Miami and just put on a great show on defense. And you know, Rudolph played pretty well. So you know, optimistically, if they go and they beat the Colts, I think you have not an assurance, but a little awakening that okay, this team can do something. But if you lose this game and then you lose to Detroit and then you lose to Buffalo, then you're just kind of like preparing for next year, and that's the hard thing to swallow.
Okay, so I'll end it on this. I know I said last thing, but I'll end it on this. When you look at – all right, how can I put this here? I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. Is it really – so if this team, right, last week, going into the bye week, right, Brian Callahan said that everybody is walking around the building like they're 3-0. Now, there was a lot of pushback about that, right, because, you know, people said, hey, well, you know, some think that they should be depressed and, you know, they should be wondering if the world's going to end. But then others are saying, well, hey, you know, I like the fact that they're upbeat, that they're positive, and they're still looking at, you know, the bright side of things. How do you think they should look at it?
You know. See, I've been in this position where we were 0-4. I've been in this position where we were 0-3. But if I walk around the building and my head is down, coaches are watching. They're watching to see how you're going to respond. They're watching to see if I can counter you in the bad times. And they're watching. I know he's saying that and this and that, and guys are kind of, you know, this and that. Because if you walk around with your lip poked out, guys are not going to trust you. But at the end of the day, as an individual, what I had to do is, you know, when I get home, then I can, you know, I can vent my frustrations out and be like, okay, we got to do this, this, and that in the compounds of my home. But when I got to the facility, I had to make sure not put on a front or put on a mask. Like, oh, everything's hunky-dory. We're walking around. Hey, we're 0-4. And hey, it's just a no. It's saying, you know what? Instead of this, I'm going to get bitter. I'm going to get better, not bitter. And that's how I had to handle it. That's where I got that slogan from going 0-3, from going 0-4, from going, you know, 0-5 in situations like to where the season looked dismal. But to get out of the mud, you got to think that you can get out of the mud and try to handle it that way. Everybody handles it different. But for me, it ain't that I'm going to be smiling like, hey, TDR, we're great. No, I'm going to buckle down. I'm going to get after it, and I'm going to master my craft. That's how I kind of handle it, T.
Yeah, no doubt. It's just like my dad used to tell me, just because you're doing bad doesn't mean you have to show it. And that's it right there. You know what?
But it's hard.
We'll
it's
end
hard
on that
though.
Note, because we had the jokes to begin, and we'll just end on a positive note right there.
This is Tavondre Sweat, and I'm talking with TD.
This is real, little homie. When it rains, it pours.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We're going to keep this thing rolling, man. You heard 50 Cent, when it rains, it pours. This next team the Titans are facing has definitely seen its share of rain, so who better to go over it with than ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter, my guy, Stephen Holder. What's good, man?
Hey, man, looking forward to catching up this weekend, coming to Nashville.
Oh, yeah, you already know what the routine is, man. Just hit me up when you land. You know what we do. I guess we'll start it off, man, obviously, with the questions about the quarterback situation. You've seen one practice as of now. Anthony Richardson, Joe Flacco, what's it looking like?
Well, Anthony Richardson is definitely further along than he was last week. You know, he has the oblique injury, took a really hard shot against the Pittsburgh Steelers a couple weeks ago, so did not play in Jacksonville. Flacco, look, he always is going to do his thing. He had a fairly productive performance down in Jacksonville, and he finished off the Steelers after Richardson spotted them an early lead. So, you know, he's doing exactly what you want your backup to do. He's going to be about as good a backup as you can find in this league right now, even at his age. So they feel pretty good about the situation. I do think over the long haul, you know, even though Flacco has been productive and has completed a much higher percentage of throws, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but with the big play capability of Richardson and adding in his running ability, over the long haul, they think that there will be more production from Anthony Richardson. Flacco did have production against the Jaguars, but that's the 32nd pass defense in the NFL right now. You know, they're dead last in pass defense. So this is still Anthony Richardson's team, and he's a lot closer this week to getting back in the lineup. I feel like the odds are very good that he does return to action this week.
You know, Stephen, I like that you mentioned how in the long haul, obviously, it is obvious, but it does need to be mentioned that this team is more promising with Anthony Richardson. But in the meantime, when you look at how this offense is flowing with Joe Flacco, what is it that has allowed it to blossom so much? And I know Jacksonville, like, that's a whole separate demon, but, you know, still they get paid to play football.
Yeah, I think with Flacco, he's just going to execute the offense and not mess around. I mean, he's going to distribute the ball. He knows where he's going with the ball. And I think that is really kind of half the battle of playing quarterback. So the things that maybe don't come as easily for Anthony Richardson just yet, because they don't come as easily for young quarterbacks, those are the areas of strength for Joe Flacco. And so I think when you talk about, you know, moving the pocket and being that dual threat, you know, certainly Joe Flacco is not bringing any of that, but he can do what he can do. And he can do that very well. So that's what they lean into. And I think Shane Steichen has done a good job of calling games, calling offensive plays that are very to each guy, which is, you know, sometimes a little tricky, you know, can be a little tricky, particularly when you've got, you know, two quarterbacks who are possibly going to play. So you've got to walk a fine line there. And but so does your opponent, of course. So that's the advantage there. But anyhow, they have made it work, and it's about efficiency. The one thing that I'm glad to see Flacco do late in that game was going into the fourth quarter, okay, before the start of the fourth quarter, he was averaging about 5.8 yards per attempt. Now, that's not really high-level offense in the NFL. But in that fourth quarter, he did get around to stretching the field, and you saw Alec Pierce, who I know you'll talk about in a minute, mm-hmm. You saw Alec Pierce really go down the field and go get the deep ball. So that was a needed addition and something the Colts really, I think, thrive on and needed to get done.
And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter Stephen Holder. And you said it, Alec Pierce. I loved him coming out of Cincinnati. Really, really did. And I was curious, you know, with A.D. Mitchell going there, how things were going to work out. What has led to his emergence?
Well, I think it's really just a willingness by the quarterbacks to put that deep ball in play. Look, if Anthony Richardson can do nothing else, we know that boy can throw the deep ball. Okay, it's the best thing that he does. And that was true at the University of Florida, and it's true now. He certainly hasn't perfected, you know, some of the shorter timing routes. But when it comes to that seven-step drop, And you've got a good offensive line in front of him. I think they're playing as well as they have in a long time. So when he can trust that offensive line and he can, you know, do the seven-step drop and really step into that throw, he can throw it with anybody else. You know, he has as strong an arm as anybody else in the NFL. I think it's a Josh Allen level arm. So that's really, I think, what Alec Pierce has benefited from. You know, the last 2 years, his quarterbacks were Matt Ryan and Gardner Minshew, and throwing the ball deep at one point, maybe for Matt Ryan, that was definitely a big part of his game. But he definitely at 38 or 39 did not have the same arm strength and wasn't pushing the ball deep. And then Gardner Minshew is really a guy who's about getting the ball out quickly. And taking the deep shots just really isn't a big part of his game. So for 2 years, Alec Pierce had to basically say, hey, trust me, I'm open. Like, you know, I'm doing my job, but I'm just not getting the ball. But it's hard for fans to embrace that when they don't see it, you know. But now they're seeing it. And frankly, he could stand to get a few more opportunities because he's fourth on the team in targets. And I'd like to see it go up a little bit, frankly.
Man, targeted 17 times, has caught 13 of them. But, Steven, 28 yards per catch. Like, this dude is a legit deep threat for sure, and I love to see it. You mentioned Anthony Richardson, and I'll use the Jim Harbaugh term, plutonium-level potential he has. There's one thing, though, right? The interceptions. And I guess in this case, this is the only time you hate to be mentioned in the same terms as Patrick Mahomes, but Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, Patrick Mahomes, they all have 6 interceptions. Each of them are the most in the league. What has been behind them? Is there a common thread, or is it just a different story for each one?
So some of them, I think a couple of them, I would say bad reads. Okay, that happens. You know, I can live with that, you know, from a young quarterback. I think the others, at least a couple of them, 2 or 3, I think are a result of misfires. And that's where he's got to fix the footwork. One of the things about Anthony Richardson is that I think he had this rookie season, you know, cut short by his injury. And one of the things that I think we take for granted when guys get hurt is that you just snap your finger and they're back in the lineup mm-hmm. the next year and they just pick up where they left off. And I think what has happened with Anthony Richardson, particularly at the outset of the season, is rust. His technique was terrible and very, very lazy, very sloppy. I think he needed to deal with that. And the good news is I saw him in that short time he played against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I saw him really address that. And he came out in that first quarter and he was just spraying the ball down the field accurately. I mean, it was impressive. And unfortunately, he took the hit and got hurt. So the question now will be, again, after a little bit of a layoff, you know, can you get back in there and pick up where you left off and really hone in on the technique. And when he steps into his throws and he delivers the ball like he knows how with the right technique, the ball is accurate. The throws are accurate. Now, when he gets lazy and relies on that big, huge arm of his to just sort of flick that wrist, you can't control the ball. And the first thing that suffers is your accuracy when you're doing that. So I'm not a quarterback's coach, but I've seen enough football that you know it when you see it. And you know good footwork when you see it. And the footwork absolutely dictates your accuracy. So that's where I think Anthony Richardson has just got to stay on the screws and be consistent.
It's crazy how much the gift can be a curse. It is really crazy.
That's what it is. That is exactly what it is. It would be like if you were the strongest guy in the gym, you know, you just go in there, you say, oh, just put a few more plates on there, right? You know, but you still get under it and actually push that weight with the proper technique, or you're going to hurt yourself, yeah. Right? So not an example that I can relate to, but you know, that's either. An example.
Hey, what's up with Jonathan Taylor? I know it's kind of been up and down as far as his availability.
Yeah, you know, those ankles, he's got a history with this ankle, I believe the right ankle. It's, I believe, of a mild high ankle sprain. I don't know how mild that is,
right.
Because when I hear him high ankle, I get nervous. But yeah. It is not something where his season is in jeopardy or he's not even going to go on IR. He's got a chance to get back this week. We'll just have to see. It's definitely a wait and see. As of now, he hasn't practiced, but they need him. There's no question about it. I really think the depth in their running back room took a big hit with the departure of Zach Moss. And I think you have seen that that drop off, to be quite frank. They don't have the same 1-2 punch that they did. And so that coupled with the fact that Taylor had been killing it. I mean, he has been superb this season. You know, the closest we've seen him to that 2021 season when, I mean, he was that's one of the best seasons we've seen from anybody in the league in a long time. Mm-hmm. So this is the closest he's been to that. But you worry now if you're the Colts, you know, is this ankle injury going to be a setback or is this just a short term thing where he can bounce back from it? So that's the question. They need him back because I think he just gives their offense just an additional level of explosiveness. Because that's his game. His game is the explosive run, and you just can't quantify offense when you have it consistently.
And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter Stephen Holder. Stephen, you mentioned the running game. One thing that this defense has struggled to do is stop the running game. I know Tank Bigsby, he had the 65-yarder, but, I mean, you're looking at a team that's giving up .151. A week on the ground. What is going on? Why are they struggling so much?
It is, I think, by far the most disappointing thing about this team this year. Number one, their defense was supposed to be their strength. They've got a lot of money tied up in there, a lot of veterans. They rewarded guys, you know, with money, and they are not getting a return on that right now. The injuries are a factor. They're piling up. I mean, you don't lose DeForest Buckner and Quiddy Pay and Samson Ebukam, who was their sack leader last year, lost for the season in training camp, for example. So, I mean, you don't lose guys like that. Tyquan Lewis, another guy who, not a huge name, but just a really gritty, tough run defender. That is going to take a – but I still think you still got to have guys show some pride and tackle. And if you're in position to make the play, you got to make the play. That it sometimes boils down to want to and just grit and determination. And the tackling is something where I can live with, you know, maybe you get outplayed, but just, you know, missing tackles and just not getting guys on the ground, that's just really disappointing. And I know there's a lot of frustration in that Colts facility right now because of that lack of production in the run defense right now. But they've got to fix it. Quiddy Pay is trending in the right direction. They may get him back. Tyquan Lewis will be a while, though, and DeForest Buckner's still on IR. So, you know, the cavalry's not coming right away. The guys who are up, they're going to have to get it done and find a way.
And last thing, one guy who is up is Latu. This was my top-rated pass rusher in this draft. I know the injury, whatever. He's cleared it, and he's up, and he's been one of the solid players for the Colts. So what's the latest with him? What are your thoughts on what you've seen from him?
I really like him. I like him a lot. You know, he's going to be a good player. He's already, I think, just demonstrated that he is a good player. What he's dealing with a little bit is some frustration. I think after the game on Sunday, he was just beating himself up. Just, you know, he was really going through it. And I you know, in retrospect, I love that, you know, because that's accountability. That's a guy who, you know, is expecting a lot of himself. I mean, he was a basket case because he's like, you know, I can't believe this. You know, I'm better than this. You know, he's like, I missed the sack. I didn't get there. And, you know, it's okay, though. I would rather a guy be like that and disappointed than a guy who's just kind of like, all right, you know, where are we going? What's good? You know, this guy, he it means something to him, and I love that. He has everything. He has all the tools. He's got the bend, the speed, the strength. He's a much stronger player than I gave him credit for. But, you know, he's drawing a lot of attention right now because of what I just mentioned. A lot of injuries to that defensive line. So there's more on his plate than I think was ever intended this early. But, you know, that's the burden of being a first round pick. You gotta live up to the hype. And it's going to be harder for him right now just because of those injuries. But I think he's built for it, and I expect good things from him in the long term.
No doubt about it. Well, I appreciate you, as you do twice a year, hopping on and talking shop, man. You already know what to do when you touch down. Hit me up. We'll go ahead and get out and about a little bit, man.
All right, you got it, man. Looking forward to it.
All right, for sure. Stephen Holder right there, one of the greats, man, one of ESPN NFL Nation's best. It's always good talking shop with him, so I appreciate him joining, coming on, and sharing some knowledge on those Indianapolis Colts. We had Jarvis Brownlee Jr. on. Appreciate Jarvis coming on. Chris Sanders, Run TMC. Parker Kelly working through and making this thing happen, man. Appreciate it.
You know it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I tell you what, we also appreciate each of you, right? You guys continue to listen. If a podcast, if it doesn't drop at a certain time on Wednesday, hey, I'm hearing from them. They're saying, hey, what's up with Talking with TD this week's episode? So appreciate how faithfully you guys follow. For those of you who aren't familiar with the work and like what you heard today, definitely search Talking with TD on Google Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Again, search Talking with TD, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.